Number 888-938-4643.
Thoroughbred horse racing returns to the home state of Secretariat when Colonial Downs in Virginia conducts its summer season with a new afternoon racing schedule and minimum daily purses of $500,000. The season runs from July 19th to September 1st with racing every Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday at 1:45 p.m. Mark your calendars for Colonial Downs' signature event, the Grade 3 Virginia Derby, on Tuesday, August 31st. All races will be broadcast on TVG this summer. Colonial Downs now running Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday afternoons at 1:45 p.m.
Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back a few minutes into hour three on this Thursday, and I was looking forward to having a Len Shulman sit down and an opportunity to promote Len's book signing tomorrow. We can still do that, and we're going to have Len on TV on Sunday, but just nice to say hello to Lenny Shulman.
Well, one of us is at the track today, Steve.
I'll be there later. I'll be there soon enough. I'm sorry.
I'm spitzing. I walked 10 miles to find you today.
Well, if you really were that interested, you would have walked out to Greenwich.
If you were cooking, I would have.
Well, we will actually. That's right. You were here for one of the parties.
The feast, the biggest feast since Gia. Yeah, it was fantastic.
Well, and in fact, you're going to be here again for this year's too, because it's coming up, and you're actually staying around. I mean, this is not like a cameo appearance. You've got book signings, three a day, I think.
Yeah, I'm like a stallion. but it was worth it to see you in that apron, which is now the screensaver on my computer.
I love it. Well, you got a chance to meet Al Gold. That was the most important part of that visit.
Yes, absolutely. No, it was wonderful, and I got to answer the trivia question of how many home runs Mel Ott hit in his career. So I was happy to pitch in with that also.
5'11".
Yeah. Yes. And answer the question of the two Yankee pitchers who exchanged wives. I was very, I was a big resource that day.
Before we do, so we don't miss out, because it would be just like us to launch into a bunch of stuff and not even mention. Give everybody the details on the book signing tomorrow, and then the other one.
Yeah, so tomorrow I'll be at the Hall of Fame at 10 a.m., between 10 a.m. and noon. I'm actually outside the Hall of Fame as we speak. And stop by there, especially if you are in town just this week or haven't seen the Hall of Fame. It's incredible since the makeover. So I will be here signing head-to-head conversations with horse racing legends tomorrow, 10 a.m. to noon, and then next Friday is the big one at Northshire Books, 424 Broadway, and that will be from 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. So after the races, come on over to Northshire, and I hope one of the gentlemen who I write about in the Legends chapter of the book will be sitting with me and signing with me, but I'll know more about that on the TV show Sunday.
Well, as it happens, I mean, that was already, you would tip that, and everybody's expecting. Is it iffy, or is it going to happen?
No, I think it's going to happen.
Oh, good, okay.
And people can figure it out, because there's only two or three legends who are still alive, so it's not going to be that tough if you've seen the book. But no, it'll be very exciting, and I'm so looking forward to it. It's going to be a great event, and the book's been really well received. I've been, you know, so gratified that people are enjoying it so much. So, I think it's people who have any interest in horse racing, I think will get a lot out of it.
Well, and we talked, you know, right as it was starting to ship, and people were so excited to get it. It's, you know, it's a perfect, it's perfect for a number of reasons. It's one of those collections, the anthology style, where, you know, it's a collection of conversations. And so, you know, it isn't, you know, it isn't like sitting down to read a novel, and you know, where if you get interrupted and you can't, you know, it's hard to pick things back up. The beauty of it is, it's, you know, it's these individual discussions, and you can pick it up and, you know, at your convenience, and certainly, you know, for people involved in racing, that's a, you know, that's a benefit, given, you know, how easily.
If you want to call it the perfect bathroom book, Steve, I don't mind. I'll take it.
I was going to let you do that. I was not going to go in that direction specifically. It was in the back of my mind, though. You're right.
You're always number two to me.
But I'm pumped. And I'm just looking for my copy. Which had been on the desk, but I think it made its way to the nightstand, actually, and I should have reached for it earlier.
Or the bathroom.
Because it's not in the bathroom. Because the Because I do need you. I'll find it by Sunday. Because you didn't sign. The one I got came from the publisher, and so it's not signed. So I've got to get.
Yeah, you know. Well, when you get them for free, they don't come signed. What can I tell you? And I'll buy one. I'll sign it.
Oh, boy.
Listen to you. Listen to you.
Well, you also,
like,
of course,
you stepped on a nail last night or something.
Oh, that's exactly what I did, and I'm telling you, the leg is turning colors here with every hour. It's I'm not. You think I'm kidding?
There's a new thing out called Doctors. Maybe you should look into that.
Well, it was already like 9 o'clock at night when I was bringing this stuff out to the street when I did this, and so what am I, you know, and Greenwich doesn't have, you know, we don't have, you know, there's not a 24-hour clinic, so, and then I knew in the morning I said I can't get to the clinic either before the show, and then we're running in the third, so I said this is not good, and so I'm going after the race. To get the tetanus shot, and
why don't you just stop by Chad Brown's barn, see if the vets are around who treated Lady Eli, and get yourself patched up?
Well, you know, people joke. I mean, I don't mind being associated with Spectacular Bid and Lady Eli.
No, you should. That's where the finest medical care is. So go for it, but. No, I'm very, very sorry. We could have done this live this morning with very bad classic rock music blaring outside. But
well, that's become a problem. It's funny you say that. That's become an issue. But we're gonna. The nice thing is, you're going to be around, and you're working on the Shulman the summer White House the Shulman residency in the area.
Yes, I'm playing whack-a-mole at my house. As soon as I take care of one disaster, another one pops up. Do you know what it's like to live without a refrigerator for a week,
yes.
By the way?
Yes. I'm going to tell you. I'll tell you a funny story. You say that. When I moved in this house in 1999, the fridge that was left here, they left the fridge, and the fridge was like warm. It wasn't. It you couldn't put anything in it. So, the first, I'd say, 3 weeks. It is very funny. The first like 3 weeks before I got a fridge, I would have breakfast, lunch slash at the Village Eatery, which was the Village Cafe. And then I'd go for dinner every night to Wally's. And, of course, Wally's, an institution in racing, the site of so many, the jocks agents for years would come out to Greenwich nightly, and they would all eat dinner at Wally's, and tons of racetrackers in general. In fact, I got a text about Wally's from Rusty Arnold yesterday, because Rusty got the biggest kick out of the news that Wally's has been remodeled and reopened. Now, it's not the same. Ginny and her family from 1932 had run Wally's. It's going to be kind of a bar pubby, it seems, for now anyway. But just the fact that Wally's has returned to Greenwich is really kind of heartening. I mean, for decades, literally decades, it was the place in southern Washington County that everybody got every big family function, birthdays, anniversaries, graduations. I mean, you'd go there and like a four course dinner, basically. You'd sit down, Lenny. They had the relish tray. When you're greeted with a relish tray, you know you're in for a treat. Then they would bring the bread, which included basically three different things. There'd be like popovers or like little rolls, date nut bread. They made date nut bread that was in the bread basket. Then came soup, salad, entree, dessert. It was the craziest, most wonderful place. And famed jock agent Vince DeGregory, whose name you certainly know, was born in Greenwich in one of the apartments above Wally's in like 1929 or 30.
Well, I'm glad my mishap could lead to your reminiscence. I'm so pleased. Meanwhile, I bought a new refrigerator. I never heard the brand before. It's an Igloo.
Is it really? I mean, is that a joke, or is it really called Igloo?
Yeah, no, I'm living out of a cooler, yes.
Like an Igloo cooler. Yeah. That's great.
Yeah.
So ridiculous.
Maybe it's just to you. It's not funny to me.
Well, because for these last several summers, you've been renting the place out.
Yes, I've always rented it. Now it's my own, and that's why I'm here for an extended time this summer. And I'm trying to get it in shape because I am renting it in September again. But it's a great place. It's wonderful to be here. I was up at Skidmore this morning walking my dogs in those beautiful woods, and it was 58 degrees, and it just couldn't be nicer up here. It's anybody within the sound of my voice, come to Saratoga. And buy a book.
Exactly. Are you still considering coming to basically retire here, or are you gonna keep back and forth to Kentucky?
Yeah, I think I'm gonna back and forth. I do love my farm in Kentucky, and for as long as I'm physically able to maintain it, I think I'm gonna do that. I love both places. Actually, I'm a very lucky guy. I love my farm and I love my place here, and it's a real luxury to be able to change the channel every once in a while and just see new sights and smell new sounds. So for as long as I'm able, I'm gonna do that, and financially or physically, whenever my downfall comes, I'll probably consolidate in one place or the other. But it's really good, except for the 14-hour drive. It's really good to have both places, but I visited with my friend Brian Lynch this morning. It's so good to see him back in New York after a year's absence. Life is always a little bit better and a little funnier when Brian Lynch is around. So it's great to see him this morning. So I owe that to you for not being here.
Well, then they owe me a big thank you. Excellent. Well, that's your man.
Always.
Nice. Well, some impressions?
Apparently he's singing karaoke at a bar called Quarters over by Mamma Mia's, so you probably want to catch that show.
I'm sure that, how about that? I'm sure he's doing a lot of men at work, I imagine.
That's right. Yeah, what was that other
Beds Are Burning?
Huh?
Beds are burning, right?
There's the band with the 6'10" guy, the bald guy, something oil from Australia.
Oh, Midnight Oil. Midnight Oil.
Midnight Oil, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. They covered a Grateful Dead song. I think they covered Wharf Rat, if I'm not mistaken.
Look at you.
But yeah. It's great to be on the backstretch again. It's wonderful. Great to
what some impressions? I mean, you've obviously you just got here. You've only been here a couple of days, but some early, you know, the meat's 25% in.
Well, it's really great because it looks like there are some lesser known trainers winning some big races, which are always great stories. And you know those guys that only you have their phone numbers. So that's always good, you know, the big guys here are winning, the guys from Kentucky are coming in and having fun, so it looks like it's really nice and spread out to me, you know, and a lot of good racing to come. I'm so looking forward to the test next Saturday. My buddy Nick Salusto picked out a filly for like 23 cents, who looks like she could be a superstar, named Bella Sophia, who's going to go in there.
Right.
And really looking forward to that.
Oh, very nice. In fact, why do I have, there's something I can't remember who it is that why I know that that's the.
She's run off the screen twice.
Yes.
She's absolutely stunning so far.
The Rudy Rodriguez.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
Yes. So that's very exciting. And so the impression is that it's been a really spread out, good fair, lots of good stories, everybody's doing well kind of meet so far.
Well, and of course, you know, being here for you too on the when we think about the book and you know the kinds of stories that you tell in it, you undoubtedly are going to be hobnobbing for the sale too for the two sales.
Hobnobbing, yeah. It's been a long time since I've been up here for the sales. I usually come right afterwards, so I am looking forward to hobnobbing at least during the day. You know, during. At night, when they actually conduct the sales, there's too much money flying around. It makes me nervous, but I do like going around to the barns during the day and, you know, seeing people. Everybody's here, that should be a lot of fun. Also, I was just talking to John Sikora the other day, and we were sympathizing with each other over the loss of Jackie Mason, who we both. Both of us consider one of our favorites, and John and I love doing shtick, Jackie Mason shtick through the years. So we were remembering Jackie, and of course John will be up for the sale.
I'm glad you mentioned him because I didn't get a chance to yet. And I remember going to see the show, the first show, which was The World According to Me.
Yes.
And
you know, Steve, and so many people had the same experience. I saw the show when he brought it out to Los Angeles, and my mom was visiting me. And it's a really special thing when you have two generations who are just, you know, enjoying it and belly laughing their way through the whole thing together. I mean, that is a really special thing that doesn't happen very often. And so many people had that experience, you know, people our age who took their parents to see that particular show, and it really spanned a lot of years of enjoyment. It was a masterpiece by him.
I assume my brother got the tickets, my brother, a Broadway press agent, and we were in the second row, Lenny, and of course, you know what that meant.
Yeah, it means you got called Mr. a lot.
I was the girl, the woman I was seeing at the time, Janice Rovick from Kansas City. And he does that shtick about about if you said somebody, some woman looked like like a prostitute, that they would get upset. If you say that to a Jewish girl, she said, "Really? You think so?" And he says, "Of course, no one would be that, except maybe this one." and point, you know, and some, listen, some couples would get upset. I can imagine. I mean, that must have been some scene, I imagine, when somebody got a, you know, probably anybody that frequents, you know, comedy clubs, like, you know, you certainly have probably seen that when somebody takes offense, right?
Yeah. If anybody gets seated in the first row or two and doesn't know what's coming, they should know what's coming.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
Mister, I'm talking to Mister. I'm talking to you.
It was really special. Yeah. I mean, is there anybody else? Is there any other Borscht Belt type that's still around?
Oh gosh. That's a good question. There aren't many of them. I don't know. Corbett Monica's still with us? I'm not sure. Certainly nobody who, you know, reached the level of a Jackie Mason. I think those guys are all gone. You know, Alan King, yeah. Jack Carter, Jackie Leonard, of course. It's a lost thing, you know. But no, he was a genius and... I called Sikora especially to commiserate with him because I know how much he enjoyed him and he went to see that show as well in New York. So it's not just for Jews, you know.
Well, and my
John's an honorary Jew.
Exactly. Well, he's Canadian. He's Canadian.
Yeah.
So that,
do we... Well, when you deal with as many Jews as John does, you kind of get honorary status. So, you know, I my hat is off to him.
our friend Dan Hart just sent me a note, and he comes up with a good one. Pat Cooper's still alive.
Ah. Yeah, okay, fair enough, yeah. And Pat had a renaissance because, you know, he would appear on Howard Stern's show. And
that's right.
People had forgotten completely about him, and he came on and he had a career all over again. You know, had his third act because of Howard Stern.
Exactly. He's going to turn. In fact, he turns 92. He was born. He was born a little bit a month after my father, actually, in 1929. Going to turn 92 on Friday or Saturday.
It was
Saturday.
I mean, Pat was a known commodity, but he was never in a, you know, back in the day, back in the 60s, he was never as big as a, you know, Jackie Mason or an Alan King or those guys. But He sure picked it back up there. It's great when those guys can come back because you don't lose the ability to tell a joke, right? I mean, it stays with you the whole time. You know, I think Henny was probably working until he was, 90 or something like that. So those guys are a real treasure trove. And, what's better than sitting alongside a parent and watching them enjoy something as much as that? I mean, it's... you know, it doesn't get much better than that.
You mentioned Alan King. My grandparents used to come into my grandparents' bakery.
Uh-huh.
In Great Neck. Yeah. I think
and,
he lived.
And wrote a book called Help, I'm a Prisoner in a Chinese Bakery. your grandparents probably weren't Chinese, but it's ironic that he wrote a book entitled...
I don't think they were Chinese, my grandparents.
This might be one of those chromosome 23 moments.
I could send it in and find out that I'm actually a Pekingese.
We have a new theme for the barbecue this year. It's going to be a Benihana.
Open your mouth. I'll flick a shrimp into your mouth.
you're gonna be juggling axes and screaming at people. It's gonna be great.
When I make that volcano out of the onion rings, unbelievable. It's a showstopper.
Yeah, Mr. Hibachi.
Lenny Shulman, folks, he'll be here all meet.
Yeah, come on. I'll be signing my Chinese cookbook tomorrow at the Hall of Fame. With 6 you get egg rolls.
Lenny, I've got to put the trolley back on the tracks.
Yes, please.
Everybody, tomorrow your opportunity to go meet Lenny and tell him how much you appreciate him and his comedy stylings and his book One on One at noon, ten to noon
head
tomorrow
to head.
At
head to head.
Head to what I say? One on one. Head to head.
Yeah.
10 to noon tomorrow at the museum and at the Hall of Fame. You can put together a visit to the hall at the same time. And in fact, Lenny's going to do a guided tour of the hall. That's part of the gig.
Yeah, Tom Durkin and I are going to be hurling insults at one another in the noon hour. So you don't want to miss that.
Outstanding. Lenny Shulman, everybody. Lenny, I will see you later, and thank you.
Thank you.
Len Shulman, folks, and Lenny's latest. And if you're going to order it online, which is an option, obviously, order all the fine titles under the Shulman byline. He's got his two novels, that Points and...
Long Way from Home.
Long Way from Home. Thank you. There you go. And isn't there one other?
No. Well, there's the Justify book, and then there's Ride of Their Lives, which is about jockeys. And I've actually been hired to do a couple of new chapters in the Ride of Their Lives book, so I'll be adding a couple of chapters to that. And that book's going to get re-released.
Oh, tremendous. Look at you.
Yeah.
Look at you. All right. Well done. Len Shulman, folks, we will stay here. We've only got, we got about 20 minutes. And we're supposed to have a Nick Tamaro visit, and we haven't gotten to Tony either, Casey. I absolutely kind of, as we've been known to do, we kind of went awry. Try Nick first, because I want to handicap a little bit. Although everybody's getting a little edgy, and I do see that the sun has disappeared. It was sunny this morning, which was a little bit of a surprise, and there the fact that the MTOs stay on, that is a bit of a warning, because certainly Glenn Kozak, he's got the weather station, and they're pretty good. So it sounds like they're expecting that mid afternoon weather to come through. I don't think we're dealing with the same difficulties that Colonial faced on Monday, which was, I mean, biblical in nature, the storms that came through there. And by the way, speaking of cancellations and difficulties, it ended up, after we had talked to Andrew Offerman the other day, Canterbury went ahead and they only ran the quarter horse races yesterday because of the heat. And so they got out in front of that, and the rest of that, the Thursday slate, which is a nice card, it comes back today. So those races that were originally scheduled, races, I think it was 1 through 5, is that right? Yeah, 1 through 5. They were scuttled. So it just gives the racing office at Canterbury what looks to be about 50 horses, 45 horses that will just feed into next week's PPs. But today, nice card, starts at 5:12. So weather woes in one direction or another. Nick Tamaro joins us. And Nick, I'm sure you were appreciative last night that I went ahead and I have registered and trademarked your call as the quarter horses leave the gate. And you can now put it on T-shirts. And they're on their way. Did we lose Nick, or is Nick just not hearing us? He's there. So that means, Nick, that means your phone, you've got your phone muted, is my guess. Oh, boy. All right. You may have to pick him up, Case. Yeah, Nick... Nick is getting, not that he needed to get better by any stretch. He was good right from the get-go. But the best part of this was I learned how to put trademark or the registered button. I learned last night.
Can you hear Steve?
Whoa, yeah, there he is. Nick. Maybe not. Oh, well, and as we wait for to get Nick straightened out, thanks to our friend Super John Veneziano, just sent a note. He says Shecky Green is still alive at 95. How about that? Good job. Look at you guys. And also, while we got a minute until we straighten out with Nick, the contest, I think it's live. I'm pretty sure the website has it set up now. They do. And it's a pick five, the Bic Five, on Saturday. And we have got, it's not like we can have multiple prizes on Saturday. What we do have, though, courtesy of John Deere and the NTRA and the Buying Advantage program, we've got a beautiful riding mower. It's worth close to $3,000. It's an X330, and it's got a 42-inch deck. Not that I know what that means. I think that's the round, the underpinning, right? That's the deck, I'm going to guess. 42-inch deck. So, I mean, somebody could go into business if you with this thing. You could start riding. You could do your neighbor's lawn. Golf courses. The five races are the three stakes, of course, at Saratoga, and the Monmouth Oaks, which came up really good, and then the Bing Crosby, which Mark Glatt seems to have surrounded. So those five races, and you pick a winner in each, and we probably actually, I forgot one thing with these guys. I think we may need a tiebreaker too. I had back of my mind, I forgot to fold in a tiebreaker, which was going to be the cumulative tote. You know, if the price of the winners combined of the five races, because if more than one person picks the five winners, we're going to have to go to an overtime. So I probably have to slip that in. All right. So give me a couple of hours with the people at Gatman, and we'll have it finalized. I'll send out a tweet and put it up at Facebook and Derby Trail. But this should be a lot of fun. If Nick, you know, your new house, do you have a big yard?
We have a decent-sized yard, and I think my wife would get a lot of use out of that riding lawn mower. So there's a chance I'll play just for that reason.
You're going to send her out? Tina does all of our yard work. She insists on it.
Admittedly, my father-in-law does all of our yard work so far, and you know we're at the time of year here where you need to mow probably every 10 days because we get so much rain.
Here too.
And yeah, he's been very, very, very good with it. I'm very pleased. The yard looks good. It's grown in nicely. And unfortunately, we had our grass planted right before the winter storm here in February, so it all died. And then they had to replant it. And so, yeah, we're rocking and rolling now. We're good. We're Got a decent sized lot, so yes, good. I generally find a comfortable position somewhere inside the house to watch and perform a supervisory type role, which I think is my specialty.
Tina has seen me mow, and she said that she won't let me near it. I do this. I like the snow plow, although she likes the snow blower. But I'm happy to let her do the lawn. She's done a great job. When I moved in here 20 years ago, the lawn was a disaster. It was a complete mess, and even when she came 10 years ago, it was still just okay. And she has really turned it into, it's like just glorious. All the layout. And she just came over and took a bow. Nick, I've been trying to reach you all week. Let's get a couple of things done first. How do you, in the wake of Maracuja's win, what is your suggestion going forward? Because this becomes a conundrum over and over again when you get a short field, heavy favorite. What do we learn from Saturday?
Very little, unfortunately. I don't think you can really take too much out of that performance, because Malathat was put in a situation where she's likely never going to be as successful. And when you're, not that she hasn't been hunted before, but when you're truly the hunted and you're now on the lead, which is not the position you've generally been in, maybe not the position you're most comfortable with, and you get kind of baited by some of the other riders, and even a world-class rider, one of the greatest of all time, like John Velasquez, he kind of took Ricardo Santana Jr.'s bait in having to use her early to not lose position, and then taking on a mid-race challenge from Clarier, and then having to deal with Maracuja late. So, I think Malathat will rebound in the Alabama, but I also, quite honestly, have seen this happen with Todd Fletcher horses, and it's usually the sign that things are sliding the wrong way. So I remember when Palace Malice performed very poorly in the Whitney years ago, and we all realized at that point, okay, well, he looked like a machine up to this point, but it ain't happening anymore. So I'd be very concerned. I certainly wouldn't be in any big rush to bet on her. The interesting thing it does is it kind of brings the Eclipse Award conversation back into it, because, I know they're taking a more conservative route with search results, but if search results were to win the test and then, maybe look to kind of try and sneak in the back door with a Cotillion win, and obviously she'll have to perform well in the Distaff, all of a sudden having an 0-1 head-to-head record against Malathat may not matter anymore, and that's assuming Malathat continues on for the rest of the year. Obviously, there's a very, very good Distaff division amongst the older females they'll have some say in it, headed by Latruska. So, yeah, it kind of made you feel like the graveyard of favorites, right? I know a lot of people really hate that saying, but it's true. A lot of short-priced horses over the years have lost to Saratoga in big objectives. This was a very surprising one, just given the field size and the fact that she had pretty much thoroughly handled everybody in there that mattered, at least two of the three rivals. So it was very surprising, and I'm sure there are more upsets in the offing this weekend and moving forward.
Well, I appreciate it, because it was one of those circumstances where you think back, and I think the majority of people thought, well, if somebody's going to beat her at Clarier, okay. And then you got down to Maracuja and Rock, Paper, Scissors, and the Paul Matisse advisory after Derby Oaks came into view, after the wire, I immediately, this shows you the quality of player you're dealing with, not just Paul, but Frank Magui. I mean, literally, they hadn't galloped out, and Magui sent me, and it was obvious that he had latched on and had successfully included or keyed or did something with Maracuja, because he said, Paul Matisse told everybody, this filly, cross out the Oaks, remember what she did in the Gazelle, and give her a mulligan. So these are the little nuancy things that it can make a huge difference over the course of, however you tally your ledger, just salting away a tidbit and trotting it out at the right time.
No question about it. I mean, there was something to be taken away from that Oaks performance, that she had spent a little bit too much time kind of buried inside, and and that was a big disadvantage. So, no, I one of the reasons why I finished second in the Wood Memorial contest, not that I'm tooting my own horn, but was because I had a cold search result, Maracuja Exacta. She looked at me like a horse that really would benefit from additional ground, and she had run well, actually kind of against the grain of the surface a couple of times during the winter, and so it was one of those where that had always kind of been a hole in my handicapping, that I didn't always identify horses that wanted to go long really well, and I would get caught in traps of saying things like, oh, you know, that horse isn't going to stretch out, and she's got no speed, and so on and so forth, and sometimes you just have to rely on what you can see visually going shorter distances and you know, maybe use a little bit of a projection-type method with pedigrees and that kind of stuff, and she really fit that category, and, you know, in fairness, I brought up search results as a contender for the Eclipse Award. I mean, what if Maracuja rattles off an Alabama win and all of a sudden she has two grade ones to match Malathot, and including a couple of head-to-head wins? So it's a long way to go, and it's a division now that, I mean, they had kind of coronated Malathot, and that was not really fair because, yes, she was undefeated and she had run extremely well, but, you know, she had never put forth any type of effort that made you really feel like, oh, gosh, they're all just running for the minors and they might as well hang it up. And the conversation about her being in the Belmont, I think I can estimate somewhere where she would have finished in the Belmont. It would have been probably fifth, about 15 lengths behind Essential Quality.
Well, and speaking of Essential Quality, tomorrow when we do our full weekend preview, obviously we'll talk about the Jim Dandy. But between yesterday's interesting result and the performance that we saw in that maiden race, where Vindictive edges Pipeline, tomorrow the Curlin and Saturday the Jim Dandy, we've got, you know, 3-year-olds back squarely in the crosshairs.
Yeah, no question about it. And you know, I've maligned the Curlin pretty regularly because I don't find it to be a productive race. But this is an interesting field. You know, you kind of wish that they weren't keeping the training wheels on First Captain and that they were willing to try him in the Jim Dandy. That being said, I mean, based on speed figures, he would be a long price. Maybe he would not be one of the contenders. It would really take a bigger performance than he's put forth so far in his career. The concern that I have with him is that, you know, the Dwyer was supposed to be kind of a breakthrough performance, and, I mean, let's be honest, it wasn't. It was very workmanlike, you know, a grinder's type of win, and I feel like that's just the kind of horse that he is. And as far as this race goes tomorrow, you're supposed to be betting against him because he is going to be 2-5 or 3-5 in a race where he is not appreciably better than anybody in this field. And I guess we'll see. Is Barron running here, or is he going to run in the Amsterdam?
Good question. I'll try to keep going, and I'll see if I can get you to answer.
All I've seen is that, you know, they're gonna re-enter in the Amsterdam, and I'll tell you, I think Barron's very dangerous in this race. I think he's clearly the one to catch, and I don't think they want to really get into an early battle with Collaborate. We'll see how hard Zayas rides Harvard, but, you know, with that said, it feels like it'll be an honestly run race, and everybody will have their opportunity. I mean, based on pedigree, there's no reason to think that First Captain is not going to benefit from going the mile and an eighth, but, you know, I would rather try horses that I think are going to be a little bit more interesting price-wise. So I'm going to pick Miles D because I think he's a horse still with a ton of upside. I thought the comeback race where I didn't really love him that day, I thought he ran very, very well, and I think he's got a real opportunity to move forward. There were probably opportunities for Chad Brown to run him into one other than maybe not going short, but or necessarily going long, but I love the aggressive move to run him here, and I know this is a horse that was pretty well liked by the barn going back to last year. So I'm going to just try for a little bit of a price, and I think this is the right opportunity because, again, I think that while I have plenty of respect for First Captain, and I'm interested to see just how good he is, I don't think I'm not in any rush to bet him at a relatively short price.
You know, I'm curious about Collaborate in here, and let me see. I haven't even looked at the 6-1 on Collaborate.
Yeah, you know, this is a great example of a horse that everybody saw on a day where a lot of people were paying attention, and I mean, he just became massively overrated, and somehow went off 9-2 in the Florida Derby. But Safi Joseph Jr. did the right thing in trying to get him back to where he can be successful. His last race was good. It was not really what you would need to see in order to be competitive here. And, you know, Alonzo, for example, who was second, is a horse that had previously earned buyer speed figures in the 70s, came back and won a Florida bred race and got an 83 fig. So, you know, the problem you're running into with Collaborate is that if this is a horse that's not in a very controlled spot, sitting just off the pace, he's going to have to overcome negative dynamics against horses that are way better than anything he's faced lately. So that's my big concern. Dynamic One is a horse I think that you have to give some consideration to. He was best in the Wood Memorial and came up just a head short after reaching the front mid-stretch. I think you're probably going to want to include him. Obviously, check the workout report to see what the reports are on how he's training. You should be checking the workout report from GRF no matter what. And Baron, I see, scorched a half mile in 46.3, which you would think Butch Reed works his horses fast, but that might indicate they're looking more towards a sprint. We'll find out. But, yeah, fun race.
Well,
I think you can make a good case for a few.
I can answer that question. Baron will run tomorrow in the Curlin per Butchie Reed.
Good to see. Maybe they won't even end up entering. And so that's, look, he was a horse that ran very well at Belmont twice. I mean, he really didn't need to win the Gold Fever and overcame Candyman Rocket late. And, you know, Candyman Rocket was a horse that, speaking of horses that got onto the Derby trail and became overrated, he was one of them. But, you know, he was could be a very solid sprinting type. And Baron ran him down and he came back and just laid waste to the field that he was supposed to do that against the Paradise Creek. And, you know, I understand it was a Pennsylvania-bred race, but he showed that he's going to have no problem with extra ground. And, you know, that's no surprise given the dam. I mean, Silmaril was one of the best Maryland-bred females of the last 20 years, probably winner of the Pimlico Breeders' Cup Distaff and a horse that won it at distances short and long. She kind of topped out maybe a little bit more of a middle-distance type, but she was successful at a mile and an eighth, and a mile. Yeah, she was a really, really, really nice mare. So I'm interested to see what Baron can do. And, in fact, I'm going to pick it. I'm going to pick it 154. So I'll let the suspense out. Let everybody know that that's where I'm going.
154 tomorrow in the Curlin. And we'll talk to Nick in about 24 hours to go through Saturday's tremendous card, particularly, of course, the stake sequence. If you haven't seen the cross country for Saturday, it's the three Saratoga stakes, the Vanderbilt and the Jim Dandy and the Bowling Green with the Mammoth Oaks, and then an allowance up for some reason at Woodbine. There actually were a couple of stakes, but they went with an allowance race as the Woodbine leg. So we'll discuss all that tomorrow. How about, we got about 3 minutes, Nick, so it should be just enough time to give everybody a couple of pushes on today's card. We're obviously a little bit at risk to some weather woes in the second half, maybe after 3:30, 4 o'clock, but jump around a little bit. And who are your best ideas today?
Yeah, I mean, it was a card that you sort of handicapped with an eye on the weather, and that was the big concern. I think in the fifth race, I like the 10 Brothers Aramaya a little bit, and, you know, without dumping on Hemin Harkey too much, because really he hasn't ridden poorly for the most part, not compared to where he was a year or so ago, but this horse is getting a drop in class and a really big jockey change to Junior Alvarado, so I felt like he made a pretty decent amount of sense, and I think you'll get a pretty square price, so he's a horse that's getting blinkers as well. Pace compromised last time against, just significantly better. He's got to beat Shinjuku, and Shinjuku is clearly the horse to beat on paper. Obviously, Horacio De Paz from a limited sample has done well at this meet. I'm interested in the sixth race being on the turf, obviously, and the reports, of course, are that Her World, the daughter of Caravaggio, is working very well for Wesley Ward. Obviously, these types this time of year are often very, very good. But this looks like a very, you know, kind of sneaky, loaded 2-year-old race. Empress Tigress worked 20-2 at the OBS April sale.
Scratched.
The second family's very turf. Then she scratched, right, okay. And then I hadn't updated my scratches yet. But then, of course, the Shug McGahey, of course, on the outside. Chad Brown Consumer Spending, the second dam was Shakanaj, who, of course, beat Etoile Montaigne on Derby Day in 2004. I suppose there's actually a chance that Chad was saddling Etoile Montaigne that day, or was at least in the mix. So, yeah, kind of ironic there. But, yeah, fun race. And Mischievous Kiss, actually, is a horse that has an excellent pedigree on the dam side as well, being that Carl Pollard family that includes Kiss Moon and Kiss Mine, both of whom were pretty competent turf horses, were actually both pretty good on the dirt as well. So that was where I was going to kind of go if this race was taken off the turf. So Yeah, I don't. I mean, the eighth race looks like a spot in the multi-race plays where you can lean on the Chad Brown Klarovic entry of secondary market, a motivated seller. It really feels like one of those two is supposed to win. Yep. Regal Retort's the only other horse I would use. So, kind of a decent race amid the sequence that can help you maybe narrow things down.
A couple of quick notes, and I completely agree on the four that I think you kind of leaned into in that two-year-old race. I picked Gunboat at 8-1, and there's some glowing workout notes. Then Her World and Consumer Spending, and Mischievous Kiss is sneaky and may need one, but I threw in as the exotics consideration at a nice price, and I'm sort of shrugging off the Christophe Clement, the club, and then as it turned out, Empress Tigris scratched. What did you decide in the Morrissey?
You know, what a tough race. I had a difficult time settling on somebody because I don't know how much I trust our last buck, who got really good towards the beginning of 2021, late in 2020 as well. Now comes back off a layoff from Michelle Nevin. I ended up picking him, but, you know, am I concerned about a 7-year-old gelding that was just getting into form and then went to the shelf? Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's no question about it. I guess the best piece of advice I could give anybody is that I would go 4 deep. I'd be using the 3, 4, 5, 8. What do you think now looks like a very obvious horse coming out of that loaded one, other than having run well 3 back in the affirmed success? And my boy Tate's been running well in these races for years. And Gemography feels like the right now horse because he didn't get the right trip 2 starts back, did get the right trip last time, and finished a good second behind Jalen Journey. So he looked to me like maybe the fresh face that could make noise.
I 100% agree. Those are my four as well. I'll get my plays adjusted to the scratch of Abiding Star, which was significant in that seventh. And we'll see you over there at Saratoga. Good, safe trip for Benji and Kid Chocolate. And Nick, we will talk tomorrow. You can get Nick's selection at...
InTheMoneyPodcast.com.
Thank you, and be sure to look for the Nick Tamaro T-shirts, and they're on their way.
That's right. There's going to be more. There's 10 of them getting ready to roll tonight. In fact, make sure you tune in to Sam Houston at 6:55 Central Time for a couple of Arabian races to kick the card off. I think one has 13 horses in it. So
outstanding.
Yeah, really. There's going to be a lot of chamomile and echinacea during the day to make sure I'm ready to go.
Nick, I'll talk to you tomorrow. Thanks.
Sounds great, my friend. Thanks for having me.
Too fun. Nick Tamaro, everybody, and Lenny Shulman, of course, as well. Neil Pessin, Dick Powell, and Mike Campbell with the difficult Arlington situation. Good luck today, everybody. Replay 6 to 9. If you missed anything, archive and podcast coming as well. I'll get the selections up at the website here shortly. And I'll talk to you in the morning weekend preview at the races tomorrow. Good luck. Thanks.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only 3 states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, 3-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 938-4643.